My junior high school vice principal, Harry Branch, was the world's biggest Beatles fan. Now, I've told a few of you this story before, but for the final day of my ninth grade year, Mr. Branch planned a day-long lip-sync concert of 1960s music. Any student could perform, to the extent that lip-syncing is performing, so long as the music was from the 1960s. But the concert, you see, would end with a full set by the Beatles. Mr. Branch handpicked the Fab Four. I was Paul. He put us through a rigorous training regimen that included afternoon rehearsals in Chris McCurley's backyard. Chris was John Lennon. We let our hair grow out to be mop tops. We were required to purchase black turtlenecks and slacks, and I had to learn how to fake play the bass guitar left-handed, which was not that hard to do since I could not play the bass guitar right-handed. So in the concert, we lip-synced Help, and I Want to Hold Your Hand, and She Loves You, and Twist and Shout, and more. And the day of the concert, the Paragould Police Department offered us a real live escort to the front of the Paragould Junior High School, which tells you how low the crime rate is in Paragould, Arkansas. Apparently, the police had nothing better to do that day. Screaming junior high fans who had been coached by Mr. Branch swarmed us as we ran up to the auditorium stage. It was awesome. And we were the Fab Four. But in real life, was it Fab Four? Might there have been a fifth Beatle? Ah, and thus we enter the perennial debate. If there was a fifth Beatle, who was it? Well, there are numerous candidates. Some of you, I'm sure, have your own. But we're going to focus on three. First, of course, there's Pete Best. Best was the Beatles' original drummer. He was part of their band during their sojourns to Hamburg, Germany in 1960 and 1961 when the band's sound coalesced. But after signing their first record deal with EMI in London, Pete Best was replaced by Ringo Starr. The reasons that people cite differ. Some report that Pete Best was unable or unwilling to maintain the rhythm. Others talked about his sudden mood swings and his desire to be in the spotlight to the detriment of John and Paul and George. Some fans even took during that period to calling the band Pete Best and the Beatles. Either way, Pete Best wanted to go and have his own way. In a band called the Beatles, he wouldn't keep the beat, either literally or metaphorically. And that is no good for a drummer. Another candidate for the fifth Beatle is Billy Preston. Preston joined the band on keyboards for the Get Back sessions, including the Beatles' final live performance on the rooftop of the Apple Records building, January 30th, 1969. Now, this was a period in which John, Paul, George, and Ringo were barely on speaking terms with one another, and virtually every week, one of them threatened to quit the band. By all accounts, Billy Preston's sudden presence leavened the others. He brought peace and a sense of joy to their work. But just as soon as he arrived, he was gone. His impact was transient. And 2 years later, the Beatles were no more. A third candidate for the fifth Beatle is producer George Martin. Martin produced the overwhelming majority of Beatles songs. He's often credited with honing their music into a coherent sound. He helped the Beatles mature into artists. George Martin himself was an accomplished musician, and he plays on numerous Beatles songs, most famously providing that harpsichord interlude on the song In My Life. Perhaps most importantly, George Martin was constant. He was there almost from the beginning until after the end. Long after the Beatles broke up, George Martin continued to shepherd their legacy with a sense of duty and a fair measure of grace. No matter the histrionics or dysfunction of the band, and there were plenty of both, George Martin was faithful. After Martin died in 2016, Paul McCartney said, quote, "If anyone earned the title of the fifth Beatle, it was George. From the day that he gave the Beatles our first recording contract to the last time I saw him, he was the most generous, intelligent, and musical person I've ever had the pleasure to know." Now, I don't know about you, but I'll call whatever Paul McCartney says gospel. Speaking of gospel, in Matthew today, the three wise men have traveled from the east, guided by a star, to pay homage to the baby Jesus. But wait a minute. Something's wrong with that statement. What is it? Anybody know? Nowhere in Matthew's account does it state that there are three magi. Have you ever noticed that? There are three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, but the number of wise men is left undefined. What if there were another? What if there were a fourth magi? You see where I'm going with this? What qualities would be required to be credited with such a role? What does it look like to pay homage to Jesus? To leave all behind, to follow him, to lay one's gifts, one's life, at his feet? Well, maybe, just maybe, those fifth Beatle candidates can give us a hint about the fourth magi. Is it the drummer who won't keep the beat? Who refuses to serve in the background as the foundation that carries the rest? Who seeks to put himself always in the spotlight, whether for adulation or just mere attention? See, the work of the gospel cannot crescendo into music that can move the world when the followers of Jesus won't follow. When a guitar string breaks or a voice cracks, the wise man knows that keeping the steady beat is the most important gift of all. It buoys all others, and it keeps the music moving when it would otherwise falter. And the same is true of discipleship in the world. Is then the fourth magi like Billy Preston, the one who brings peace and even an injection of joy, who soothes and inspires, but who shows up late and leaves early and soon? It may seem so in the short term, but often such a figure ends up wounding where at first it looks like healing, and distresses where at first he appears to encourage. It can be intoxicating to join a cause or an effort or a faith and to share one's gifts. But when enthusiasm just as quickly wanes and the disciple fades away, people feel abandoned. The gospel is bereft, and there's no one there to share grace in a world that desperately needs it. The gifts that one left at the feet of Jesus remain unused in the stable stall, to be swept away with yesterday's hay. So what about the third option, the George Martin option? George Martin's gifts were abundant. He may have even been a better musician than any of the Fab Four. And he shared those gifts in whatever way was needed at whatever time circumstance required. He didn't need to be center stage. And he patiently received the sometimes swirling turmoil around him and melded it into something enduring and moving and beautiful. He arrived early, and he stayed until well after all others had gone. He was committed. He was tireless. He was faithful. We might even say he was wise. I would have loved to have been the fifth Beatle. I've been singing Beatles songs in the shower since ninth grade, after all. But that's not happening. It can happen, though, that you or I become the fourth Magi. It doesn't require virtuosity or unnatural enthusiasm, but only a willingness to seek out Jesus, to offer to God our gifts, whatever they may be, to place the gospel of love in the foreground, and to provide a steady and supporting beat for God's work in this world. Being the fourth Magi entails dedication to that work from now until the very end, knowing that it won't always be easy or harmonious when we have personalities and agendas and the feelings of others with which to contend. It means being faithful to the star, wherever it may lead. These are the things that make us wise. These are the things that count us among the Magi. And they contribute to the music of grace that can change this world. Amen.